the second of two sessions here at Tech Ed. We're going to be talking to you today on the SharePoint Developer's Guide to Project Server. By way of an introduction, for those that weren't here yesterday, my name is Brad Purdy. I'm the Solution Specialist for Enterprise Project Management at Microsoft. Absolutely delighted to introduce Brian and Alex to take you through the content. There's some great stuff. And I'll pop back up at the end for some Q&A with you as well, so we've got some time later on. But I promised I wouldn't take up too much time, so enjoy.
Thanks, Brad.
Excellent. Cool. Good morning, everybody. So, as Brad mentioned, my name is Brian Farnhill. I'm a solutions architect for Xteligent Design, a Canberra-based SharePoint consulting company, SharePoint Server MVP, and collaboration platform VTSP.
And I'm Alex Burton, a senior consultant with OBS and a project server MVP based out of Melbourne.
Cool. So, let's get into what we all came here to see, some project server stuff. It's only a service application. This is the message we're going to be drumming into your head all day today. In fact, we actually have some stickers here. If anyone would like a sticker for your laptop that says it's only a service app, come and get one. But in fact, just to make sure everybody's awake here, let's do some audience participation. I want you all to say this with me on three. So on three, it's just a service application. One, two, three.
It's just a service application.
Excellent. Fantastic. Everybody's awake. Good to know. Okay, so quick question, show of hands. How many people are actually using Project Server in their environments right now? Yep. How many people have written code of some sort for Project Server already? Cool. So the idea for this sort of session came out of the fact that Project Server is starting to gain a bit more traction, particularly with the 2010 release, and developers are starting to look to customize it a bit more as we start to do more stuff with SharePoint as well. And there's a bit of a logical crossover from one to the other, given that the products are so tightly integrated. So what we wanted to do with this was start to show some SharePoint developers some ways that you can transition across to doing Project Server stuff and hopefully allay some fears that may be out there and stigmas that Project Server is too hard, we're not going to look at it. So what we're going to go through today, Alex?
Yep, so we're going to do a bit of an introduction into Project Server development. So what is Project Server? What does the architecture look like? And what are the key things as developers you need to know? We're going to go into three main customization scenario. So these are things that we've seen out in the field from our customers that sometimes they trip up on, so we thought we'd go through them today. We've got a call to action so that the stuff you see today, you can go off and try yourselves, okay? And we're going to point you at a number of resources that are going to help you with that. And then finally, we've got a bit of a Q&A, and we have a ticket to the Australian SharePoint conference for either the best question, or if we don't get a good one, one that we'll make up on the spot, so pay attention. So I'm going to assume that all of you are aware of the SharePoint Blue Donut and kind of the benefits that SharePoint can give you for managing projects. So things like using collaboration sites to store documents, search to find stuff, metadata to classify information and that kind of stuff. You may also be aware of Project Professional 2010 and the new Sync to SharePoint feature. So that ability to take a project schedule, to save it into a SharePoint list, and then for your team members to come along and to update that list with their status, their percentage complete. And then as a project manager, you can press a button in project and pull that information back down into the schedule. It's a very powerful feature. Now, if you get the chance, there's a demo of that in the hands-on labs downstairs. Go and have a play. So it's pretty impressive. Now, those two features are great for a lot of organizations, but to be honest, in many cases, you want a little bit more. And that's where Project Server comes into the mix. So Project Server is only a service application, but it sits on top of SharePoint Server Enterprise Edition. And it provides a number of key features. The first one is around demand management. So this ability to have a configurable framework of online forms that you can collect information about business ideas or project ideas. And through the use of a workflow process, you can determine when these forms are displayed and what information is collected. Coupled with that, we have portfolio selection capabilities, so we can define a number of business drivers for our organization, things like ROI, risk, and the like, and we can then go through and look at each of our business ideas and score them against those business drivers objectively. Now, you can also then perform an analysis across those projects to get the idea of which one's the best fit for your drivers, and then see what your cost and resource availability is to work out whether or not you can deliver them. Now, when most people think Project Server, they think schedules. It's got to be the case. So Project Server has a best-in-breed schedule management component. So every project schedule you have, you can upload to a central portal, and your users can come in, and they can see every project going on within the organization. Now, those schedules can be managed either using Project Professional or the Project Web App, so an online web-based application that enables you to edit project schedules. And you can apply statusing information either directly or through Project Professional or through the via the task features, the My Tasks, or the timesheet capabilities. Coupled with the schedule management is a resource management component. So the resource management enables you to have a central pool of your resources that you can then assign out to the projects within your organization. So importantly, you can see what your resources are doing and what they're not doing. So are they really doing 40 hours a week, or are they doing 30 hours a week and going down the pub early? For every project that you spin up inside Project Server, you get a dedicated collaboration workspace where you can store artifacts linked to that project. And we'll see a little bit more on that later. And finally, Project Server has a best-in-breed BI and reporting engine. So for those of you who weren't in Mark's sessions yesterday, I'd suggest you go and look at that online. But basically, we have a dedicated reporting database, something that SharePoint really ought to have but doesn't, which gives us near real-time information about all our projects, tasks, resource information. We also have 14 OLAP cubes that are built out of the box, which we can go in and do slicing and dicing of any information we want. So that gives you a bit of an overview of functionally what Project Server provides. Brian's going to take us through some of that architecture.
So at a high level, when we start looking at the various bits and pieces within a Project Server, this is sort of roughly the kind of architecture we're looking at here. So you'll notice down the bottom when we start looking at the databases, Project Server adds another four databases to the mix. We have a draft database, published database, reporting, and archive. Right, so they are just project-specific data that goes in there. You see, we still have content and config databases here for SharePoint, and any SharePoint-specific data still ends up there. On top of that, in the application server layer, yes, we still have our usual SharePoint components here, but Project Server brings a few other things to the mix. It's got a specific data access layer to talk down to the databases. It's got business objects, and it's got these WCF services. Right? So this is how we access and manipulate Project Server data through the web services. There's also an event engine, which is somewhat slightly different to the event, to the way you do event handling in SharePoint. And we've also got this queuing engine as well, and I will touch on that a little bit later throughout the demos and some of the code we're showing off. Then up at the web front end, we've got the WCF forwarder, the web service forwarder. So again, I'll elaborate that when we get to the interfaces. But basically, you can see that third-party applications are able to access data, Project Professional is able to access the data, and through Internet Explorer, the Project Web application comes back down into that business layer as well. So there's lots of different ways that we can start talking to Project Server and getting some of the data back out and manipulating it to do some really cool stuff. So what do we tell the developers when we get started doing Project Server development? So the first thing to know is Project Server is built on top of SharePoint. So a lot of the same rules apply, right? We still work within Visual Studio. We still use the SharePoint project types. We still bring our stuff down to WSP packages and deploy them using all the same rules that we do for doing good SharePoint development. All right, so nothing different there. The Project Server SDK is your new best friend. There is a lot of really good code samples and lots of good starters, and a lot of the code we're actually going to go showing through the demos today comes directly from the SDK. So we'll talk to some of that points, but when you do get started with it, it is almost a necessity to be able to download that SDK before you start doing some Project Server development. You need to understand when to build and when to customize. Right? So as with any other SharePoint customizations and whatnot, you need to be aware of what the product can do for you out of the box and what you can configure it to do, versus what you then need to go and build and extend on. All right, so again, before you dive into your Project Server development, spend some time understanding the product, what its limitations are, what you can do with it, because there is a lot you can do, and then where you need to bridge that gap with code before you start planning your implementation. So to start with here, we've got a bit of a comparison around what's the same and what's different. So things that are exactly the same for Project Server and SharePoint, things like ribbon manipulation, JavaScript stuff, the JS grid, Silverlight, the SharePoint server-side object model is still there. Event handling, for the most part, is pretty much the same as well. And solution packaging, again, all the same. Things that are similar but a bit different, you've got client access through client object models, because Project Server is all web services. You're able to access it all remotely from a client anyway. Workflow is a little bit different, and I'll let Alex elaborate on that. Link is still available for all SharePoint-specific data, so you can still use SPMetal to get to to create objects to access your lists in SharePoint, but the Project Server-specific data you can't get to with Link. And same story with Open Data and REST protocols. You can get to the SharePoint-specific data with those. Things that are different and worth knowing. Alex mentioned the dedicated reporting database. So it gives near real-time updates as of the data that project's storing for you, right? So this is going to allow us to be able to quickly get to data rather than having to go through the object models. Multiple OLAP cubes, so again, there's 14 of those that we can start querying to get reports out of. And supported developer environments. So a quick show of hands, how many people have got SharePoint deployed to Windows 7 and are coding on Windows 7? I've got bad news for you people. You can't actually install Project Server onto Windows 7, all right? So while SharePoint is supported for Windows 7 development, Project Server is not. You need to put it onto a server OS and develop from there.
Thanks, Brian. So we're going to look at the first common customization scenario, which is around building demand management workflows. So I said before, demand management is about creating this customizable framework of online forms that you can collect information about projects and project ideas and business ideas, and that's held together with a workflow process. Now, it's not just project ideas, it's a little bit more than that, and demand management, probably not the best word, best name for it. See, this capability, this framework that enables you to have these online forms is there throughout the whole of Project Server. So it's there for the whole project lifecycle. It's not just there when you're thinking about ideas for a project. It's there all the way through to when you do your post-implementation reviews. So you have that capacity to use those online forms to collect information or to prompt your users to do things. So how many people here have done a project where, say, for instance, your specification hasn't been signed off before you started coding? Yep.
Go on.
There's a lot of liars in the room.
Liars.
Ultimately, with a Project Server demand management workflow, you have the capability to basically enforce that a document's been signed off using a workflow process before you would enable it to move to the next stage. Okay, bit overkill, but that's the theory there. So what we've got on the screen here is a typical workflow, a typical process. So we're starting off with the idea in the top left-hand corner. We're going through various steps, reviews. We're getting approvals happening. We're getting an idea of whether or not business are going to let us run the project. We're doing a selection on it. We build up our business case. All the time we're collecting information. We can do other things. We can look at information that's been collected and make intelligent decisions on that information. So if it's over a certain amount of money to do the project, well, then we need to route it to the executive to make an approval of whether or not we can go forward. But you get the idea. We can go through the whole process and use Project Server demand management workflows to help us with that. Now, I'm just going to quick differentiation here. I'm talking about Project Server demand management workflows. I'm not talking about things like document approval workflows or the other workflows that you get in SharePoint, okay? So this is slightly different. So before we move into a demo, I need to just get a couple of describe how Project Server names these things. So across the top, we have a number of phases, okay? So our phases here are create, select, plan, and manage. They're the broad brushstrokes of your project, okay? So typically your projects will follow a create, execute, closure type scenario. Within each of those phases, we have a number of stages. So stage is like a step within the process, okay? And we can have from one to many stages per phase. For each stage, we can have a project details page. So that's an online form, okay? So where we collect that information about our projects. So these project detail pages, or PDPs, as I'm going to refer to them from now on, because project detail page is a bit of a mouthful, are basically web part pages, okay? So they're simple web part pages, and they use special Project Server web parts, which know how to talk to Project Server's metadata or custom fields, okay? Those web parts and the PDPs will enable you to view information about your project, but also to edit and update and collect that information. Now, each stage can have one or many PDPs. Basically, how we determine which PDPs are shown is based on which stage we're in. Now, how we move from stage to stage, well, that's where the workflow comes in. So the Project Server workflow is responsible for moving us between the stages and applying those, looking at business rules and working out whether or not we need to get approvals, send approvals off, update other information, and move through the process. So I'm going to talk about the workflows for a little now. Just like SharePoint workflows are built on Windows Foundation workflows, Project Server workflows are built on top of SharePoint workflows. Okay? The Project Server workflows are site workflows, meaning they're not bound to a list. Okay? So we get to use the site workflow, and we can use it on the site level. Project Server workflows can only work with the project entity in the PWA app. So if you're familiar with Project Server, there's also entities, resource entities and task entities. You can't bind these to those entities at the moment. Now, if we want to build one of these out of the box, we have to use Visual Studio 2010. Okay. Now, the reason for that is, if you've tried, SharePoint Designer is explicitly blocked in Project Server. It won't let you in there. They don't want you breaking Project Server capabilities. The other side of it is, the actions that Project Server workflows provide need to use Project Server's built-in API, a thing called the PSI. Now, SharePoint Designer doesn't know how to talk to the PSI, okay, yet. Maybe it'll come in a future version. It'd be nice. But in using because of that limitation, we have to use Visual Studio. Okay, so we get a number of new actions, and you'll see here we've got some of those actions, things that are looking at specifically the object model of Project Server. So things like the check-in, the commit, the submit. These are special commands within Project Server that are exposed, and we'll show you that in the demo. But also some of these ones down here look at properties, look at that metadata, and do compares and updates and the like. As you'd imagine, the configuration of your workflow is deeply tied to the configuration of Project Server. So if we're moving between different stages, and our workflow is the process that moves us between these stages, we need to be the workflow needs to be aware of those stages' configuration. So we'll show you in the demo that the configuration is quite tightly integrated, and it's important that you keep them in sync. Otherwise, your workflows are going to fail. And finally, every workflow is associated with a thing called an enterprise project type, or an EPT. You can see that Project Server people are really into their acronyms, can't you? The EPT is basically a container that enables us to have different workflows for different types of project. So if you think about it, if you're doing a multi-million dollar SAP project, your workflow process and your project management process may have much stricter governance, more approvals, more steps, more things that have to be done, as opposed to an IT project that might be quite small and only require a few steps. So we have to associate them with an EPT. So we're just going to look, before we go into the demo, I thought it'd be easier to show you the demo on a slide before I show you it in Visual Studio. So to give you an idea, what we're going to do is we're going to have a project idea, and we're going to ask, does that project require funding? So we've got a very simple form, and we're going to say, does this require funding, yes or no? If it doesn't, everything's good, and we're approved. Okay. If it does, then we're going to go out, and we're going to look at Project Server's built-in security model, and we're going to ask our team leader, can we have approval to do this project? If they say yes, all is good, and we'll move the stage up to project approved. If they say no, we're going to reject the project and we're going to cancel it. So ultimately what we have here are three stages and two decision points. So with that, my assistant's going to push the button. Thank you. So here we have the PWA app. This is the project web app, the main area. What I'm going to do first, I'm just going to show you the configuration of Project Server before we get into the workflow. So the key thing when you're building these is make sure you configure the Project Server correctly before you start thinking about the workflow, because you need to mash them together. So go and get the configuration worked out first. So I'm going to look in here. I'm going to go to my project stages. And you'll see I've set up three project stages: idea collection, idea cancelled, and idea approved. Now, if we look at idea collection, just spinning up. Bum, 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 bum. What we're going to see when we go in there is going to give us an idea of what PDP is. And you can see there's a number of configuration options. There's information that we can put in. But more importantly, we can choose what project detail pages we want to see. So we have a library, a PDP library, where we configure these with the web parts. And then these are rendered within this page, and we can choose which ones we want to see when we go to that stage. Okay, so I'm going to come out of that. I'm going to go to Visual Studio. So what I have here is a Visual Studio workflow. Let's open the toolbox. And I've got a number of Project Server actions on the left-hand side that I've brought in. So I've associated this with the right library, brought it in, and you can see those actions that you saw on the slide are available. Now, for the sake of time, I've created the workflow. I don't know about you, but I find this quite hard to use and takes a long time to associate the context. But what we have here is a sequential workflow, okay? Big thing here is Project Server workflows are sequential. They won't support state machines, okay? So you have to use a sequential workflow. The first action we've got here is a project sequence action, basically telling the workflow engine that this is project related. And then we're jumping into a number of project-specific workflow actions. This one here, as we're saying, we've set the idea collection stage. So if I look at the properties, you'll see here that we've got the stage UID, and we're saying that this is the idea collection stage UID. Now, as I said before, this is tightly integrated with Project Server, so the configuration. So when we look behind the scenes, you'll see here we've got the idea collection stage UID is a GUID. Okay, so you have to get to love GUIDs if you're doing these workflows. Now, how we find those GUIDs? Very simple. We go in to the configuration, look at the project stage, go to idea collection again, and you'll see up the top here, we've got the stage UID is up there, okay? Or if we come down to the bottom, and I should have put zoom it on here, it's also available down here. So it's why it's important to get that configuration first so that you can get these GUIDs that you can drop into your workflow. So getting back to the workflow, we're going to set the stage to the first stage, which is idea collection, which is the top of our slide. Then we're going to do a bit of a logic comparison. So we're doing a compare funding required. So we're going to go off and we're going to look at our online form and we're going to say, is funding required? Yes or no? And then we're going to do a comparison. So again, stay out please. So again, we're going off, we're going to the funding required UID and pulling that up. Looking at Project Server's metadata. So if we go in here just to show you. Server settings. Okay, so we've got a funding required field here that I've set up. That's a workflow controlled custom field or metadata value. And if we go down the bottom, again, we've got the UID that we can reference in the code. We do a comparison on that. If we get the answer yes, then we go in. We go into an if-else loop. If we get the answer yes, then we're going to go off into to generate an approval. Okay, or if we get the answer no, well, we bypass the whole thing and we'll just go through to the end. Okay. Now inside the approval. Another project server specific action here is one that's going off and looking at project server security model to pull up the team lead. So remember, we were going to go off to the team lead and get that yes or no. We're pulling in some property information, so we're reading the project name as a property and pulling that into a variable. And then we've got a normal office task. If you're familiar with SharePoint workflows, this is a normal office task. We're generating up that task. We'll assign it out to our project team lead, and then we'll wait for the response, so whether or not it gets rejected. If it does, we'll cancel, and if it doesn't, we'll go through. Okay, so. Yes. So in the interest of time, I've already deployed this into Project Server. To see that it's there, we go to Site Settings, and we go to Workflow Settings. And you'll see here we've got a TechEd 2011 workflow. If we click into that, you can see we've got our workflow that we've deployed. So that's just a case of doing a right-click deploy into Project Server. But because that's going to knock over our app pools, I haven't done it for the demo. Or else, if you were deploying this without using Visual Studio, you've got a simple WSP that you can go in and deploy as a normal feature. The workflow needs, like every other workflow, two task lists. It needs a history list and a task list. In this case, it's using the Project Server workflow task list. So I'm going to go back. The last thing I need to do is check that I've associated it against an enterprise project type. So those EPTs, those containers, are the important thing we need to make sure those workflows are associated with. So I'm going to go into the EPT. I'm going to choose my TechEd 2011 project. And down here it says Site Workflow Association. I'm going to make sure that I've got my TechEd 2011 workflow associated. Now, a little gotcha if you do this in the real world. If you do the deploy and come into this screen, it will tell you that it's associated until you click in, and then you see it's not, okay? And you're going to get all manner of trouble, so just make sure you go in there and have a bit of a look. So now I'm going to kick off a project using my EPT so that we can see this workflow. So the first thing I'm going to do is go new, and I'm going to choose TechEd 2011 project from the top left. And my first online forms come up, so I'm in the first stage, I'm in the idea collection stage. We've got our first form, and I'm going to put in here. Okay, and I'm going to choose if funding's required. So this is one of those metadata fields, those custom fields that Project Server has. In this case here, I'm going to say no, we don't want funding. So based on our workflow diagram that you saw before, when I say we don't require funding, we should be good to go and we'll be approved straight away. So press save. The workflow is going to initiate. It's going to drop itself onto the queue that Brian mentioned earlier. And then it's going to come back. And hopefully everything's good and our project's moved into the approved stage. There you go. So this is the workflow overview page. And if we go in here and have a look down the bottom, you'll see that we were in idea collection, and we've moved straight through to approved, and the workflow's completed. Okay? So that's the first demo. It's worked. Second one. I'm going to do some one more, and I'm going to do the workflow not required, and we're going to see what happens with that approval. So I'm just going to go new, TechEd 2011 project. Okay, funding required. Yes, we do require funding, so it's going to be a little bit harder this time. So again, just dropping it onto the queue. The workflow is going to start, and it's going to come back. Here it comes. Back to my workflow overview page. You can see here on the left, we've got our PDPs that are associated to appear. And if I go into the workflow stage here, you'll see that it's saying we're at idea collection. We're currently processing. Okay. If we go down to our additional workflow data, we can see more information about the workflow. So I'll click on that. We've got more information. So that we've got this under comparison. It said that we require information. Now, in this case here, we said it needed to be approved. Now, luckily, I'm set up as the approver, so I'm going to go to my workflow approvals area. Now, that's a project server-specific one that looks at those project server workflow task lists. I'm just going to open that up in a different tab. Or not. The control button doesn't work. And you'll see that we've got a task that's been dropped in there. Okay, it's assigned to me. If I click into that and have a look, I can see information about the approval. If I click edit, we're going to get a special content type up that enables us to be able to view the approval for this particular project. This content type is in the code is determined by, again, another content type ID that you put in the code when you create the task. If we want, we can go in and review the project details. I'm happy. Let's do it and click on approve. Okay, so my task is going to get updated. If I go back to Project Web App, go back to Project Center, and look at my project. And we come back into our workflow overview here. You'll see that we've gone from idea collection through to approved. Okay, so you get the idea. Very, very simple stuff to do, but very powerful when you start to think about your overall governance process. Thank you. So there are a number of considerations around these workflows. First one's a thing called a skip to stage. Okay, so project server workflows, there's capability in there that enables you to restart the workflow. And that's quite important when you think about it, because these workflows for big projects can last months or years. And there's always going to be that little bug that you didn't catch in testing, or there'll be that change in process, or you know, you need to get the exec to approve this now when you never did before. So when you deploy these new workflows, you need to take into account, when you code these new workflows rather, you need to take into account this skip to stage logic, which enables you to restart. What it does basically means that you can drop your workflow in at a certain stage, so you don't have to start at the beginning again. So when you use this skip to stage and you initiate it through Project Server, it passes in a skip to stage context. Basically, you put if statements in your code, and you say, if skip to stage, ignore. Okay, so ignore the approvals, go around it. The only caveat to that is if you've got custom fields or metadata fields that are required that are missing, in which case your skip to stage will stop. And it's up to you to go in there and put that information in and then do the restart of the workflow. As you saw in the demo, the actual workflow is tightly coupled with the project server configuration. You need those GUIDs. You need to make sure those GUIDs are the same. And unfortunately, they may change if you reconfigure them on different boxes. Okay, so they may change from your dev box to your UAT box to your prod box. Okay, luckily, there's a couple of tools out there that will make that easier for you. Playbooks. How many of you guys have used Playbooks or heard of it? Yep, okay. Playbooks, fantastic tool. The 2010 version has been updated to include demand management components. So you can pull up project detail pages, phases, stages, and the like, script them into an XML file, and play that XML file back into your next environment. Okay? It'd be awesome if SharePoint had something like that, wouldn't it? The other thing is around a DM import export solution starter. So there's a thing that Microsoft made available, which basically takes your demand management assets, wraps them up into a feature, and you can deploy that feature into your other server. Okay. There are third-party solutions out there that take away some of the pain from Visual Studio, basically giving you a web-based view of building the workflow and abstracting some of that GUID stuff away. There's UMT have got one coming to market, and I think Nintex have got one out there at the moment. So potentially have a look at that if Visual Studio is not your thing. And finally, with workflows, leverage the solution starters. Okay, so Microsoft product team have made available these things called solution starters, which are pretty much sort of production-ready code that give you capabilities across, I guess, some of the shortcomings of the product. The first one, dynamic workflow, is a simple linear-based workflow process. It uses an info path form, and you can go in and configure a workflow that just moves linearly through your process, but it will take into account approvals, security groups, and sending emails for you. So about 75% of customers, that will do the job. Okay, so have a look at that. There's also a morphing workflow that enables you to change those EPTs on the fly, which is quite useful. And finally, a visualization component that you may want to look at, which enables you to see where you are in that workflow graphically very simply. So with that, I'm going to pass back to Brian.
Cool. All right, so now we're going to start talking about the project server interface. All right, so this is how we can start using some code to get into all the fantastic data the project server is storing for us. So at a quick glance, here's a big list of all of the components that make up the PSI. How many of them did we count there?
Well, there's a question on this later, so yeah. Pay attention.
So as you can see, there's a lot of data that we're able to get access to through from admin stuff to calendars to projects to events, cubes, workflow, all sorts of stuff that we can get to, right? So there's a wide range of things we can do with it when we want to start writing code to extend. Now, things to know about the PSI and how we get to it. There are two interfaces for it, right? The first is an ASMX-based set of web services. And the second is a WCF set of services. So the PSI's object model is essentially the same between the two, but the ASMX one was there from the 2007 because that was what you used to get the PSI in Project Server 2007. The WCF is new for 2010. Things to know if you've already got code that was using the PSI in 2007 is that things are a little bit different for the ASMX services in 2010. Firstly, when you're actually adding your references, you need to specify the WSDL query string component when you're adding your reference. You have to make the references through the web application URL, and you cannot use localhost as the URL anymore. You've got to use a machine name or a host header or a DNS. Project Professional and the Project Web Access all use the WCF services. All right, so they're all talking back through the PSI the same way we write code to. All right, so everything that Project is doing, we can write code to go and do as well because it's all using that same set of API. Right, but WCF is the recommended approach to take for new applications. Right? The only scenarios you would go looking at using the ASMX model is if you cannot use WCF in your application. And as I mentioned before, the object models are identical, so you're not going to be limited functionality-wise by the choice here. But like I said, the documentation that Microsoft put out on MSDN and whatnot is to use the WCF as the preference. So working with the PSI, services exist within the SharePoint Web Services application because it's just a service app, right? So all the WCF services will hide away in that SharePoint Web Services application that gets created on your farm under the port 32843, whatever it is, has a wonderful GUID slapped in there, and you can access the services from there. But you can't call directly to that service, though, and here's a bit of a catch. So what we've got is, because of the way that claims authentication is implemented on top of that application, we're unable to directly call to it without actually having to modify the web config file. So what Project Server's actually got for us is this thing called a service router that we can call to, and it will then be able to direct us out to where the calls need to go. So this is actually a URL that sits in under the layouts directory within your Project app, and you essentially define your endpoint to point to there in your WCF stuff, and we'll see this in the demo, and it will then be able to route you out to the appropriate service URL. So some common scenarios for why you would use the PSI that sort of come up. First one is pulling data from the reporting database, specifically if you are behind a firewall and you can't call directly to the reporting database yourself. So say you've got a project server sitting in an extranet somewhere and you need to provide access to the reporting data. Because it's all web server stuff, it's all going to be sitting on either port 80 or 443 and is much less likely to not get stopped by some sort of firewall rather than trying to call to SQL directly. So the PSI lets us do that. Consolidating PSI calls. So one of the things we can do is we have control over the order of the calls that we put in and when we wait for the queue and whatnot, so we can start to consolidate the number of calls that we send back to the server and do things in batches and reduce traffic over the wire. We can transform data and pass it off to a third-party application, right? So again, just looking at being able to retrieve that data and manipulate it to provide it out to some other system that needs to get to project service data. We can put something in the middle there. And extending existing line of business systems with project server data. So again, being able to take the data that we're putting into project server and using to track our projects and using that to enhance existing systems that you may have put investments into in your organizations already. So with that, we'll get into a bit of a demo. I'll show you how some of this all works. Okay, so when you install the Project Server SDK and you start having a read through that, the first thing that you are going to need to do is essentially generate yourself a proxy class to access the web services. Right, so the SDK gives you some good instructions on how you should do this. And essentially, as part of the SDK, it even gives you some scripts that you can call to be able to go and do this for you. So here's one of the scripts. And basically, there's a whole lot of description in here if you'd like to read it. But basically, all you need to do is come in here and configure your URL. So here you can see where the name of the server. And the second URL here is the URL for the service application within SharePoint. So you can see that I'm calling out to that port 32843 URL with the big GUID on the end. Now, you can actually look that GUID up in a couple of ways. You can either, A, manually sort of poke through that web application and try to find the one that's got the PSI folder in it, or alternatively, you can use PowerShell and get a reference to the service application and see the identifier of it through PowerShell, which is the easier and the preferred way to get that. But essentially, once you do that, you run this script file, and out comes a DLL. Now, that's just calling, the script file's just calling out to service util over and over again, right? So it's still generating the WCF stuff, the proxy classes for us, and then compiling. If you need to do things like change the namespaces that it's generating and whatnot, you can tweak that script file a little bit further and get that level of control. Alternatively, I can take the source files that it generates and go and put them into a project that I've got existing. So it doesn't have to be a separate DLL, but for the sake of simplicity, we've separated out here. Now, if it is going to be in a separate DLL, though, looking back at our SharePoint project here, one of the things you need to remember is you do need to also include that DLL in your SharePoint project. So looking at my package in the Package Explorer here. Oops, didn't mean to pin that. You can see that I've got, under the Advanced tab here, I've specifically included a reference to that additional assembly. So both assemblies, the one that is in my current solution and this additional one, will be included in the WSP and pushed out to the farm when I deploy. So once I've got that, I can start looking at being able to write some code within my application that's going to take advantage of this. Now, to do that, I've created myself a little class here called Service Builder. Now, what this is going to do for me is it's going to define my endpoints and bindings for the WCF calls, and I'm going to, through that, access my my objects. So I've decided in this case to implement iDisposable on my class. So essentially, all of my project server calls are going to be able to be wrapped up within a using statement. I'll be able to contain my objects through that. Now, what I'm doing is I'm passing in the URL of my project server, and from here I'm generating the URL to the endpoint. So I'm going to zoom this in. So under the VTI bin folder, PSI projectserver.svc. Now this is the URL of that service router that I mentioned earlier, right? So we're going to generate the URL based on the first half is the URL of my project web access, with that slapped on the end. So you can see I'm creating my binding objects down here, setting some of the properties on the bindings, because these would normally go into like a web config if you were doing a WCF application, but because we're not modifying SharePoint's web config here, we're doing it through code. And basically what we do at the end there is we go through and create my project client and QSystem client. So these are two of those classes that were generated by the script earlier. If I needed to use more of them, I could spin them all up there. Basically just specifying how they use impersonation and opening them up for use. So now that I've got that set up, I'm ready to start actually making some calls. So I've got a couple of web parts in here. Now, the first one I'm going to show you doesn't actually call to the PSI, but it provides some data to my other web parts. So when you create a project site to go with a project, it actually stores the ID of the project in Project Server as a property in the site's property bag. So this first web part actually just gets that and passes it out as a connection. Right? So I can then connect other web parts to it, and they're then aware of the ID of the project so that their calls to the PSI know which project they need to refer to. So you can see down here, I've just basically calling out to the the web.all properties for my property name in there and passing that back out as the connection. So the first of the two web parts I'm going to show you is just a quick little project summary web part, fairly basic, and we'll show you how you can do some basic calls. So I'm a filter consumer, so it's receiving the ID from the existing web part that I just showed you. But here's how we're actually doing it. So you can see my using statement here. I'm creating a service builder, so this is that class I showed you which defines all my endpoints, and passing in the URL of the current site, so assuming that I'm working within the project server web application site collection. From there, I can use my service object to come into project and pass in read project with the ID of the project and which of the data stores I'd like to call to. So here I'm specifically saying I'm interested in what's in the published database. I can also refer to the archive database or the draft database, but or any of the other sources there. From there, moving through, I'm not doing anything terribly complicated. I'm just sucking out the project name, the enterprise project type it was based off, and the start date. So what we get is essentially a data table, right? And it's got a bunch of constants slapped on the end there for names of columns and things like that to make it easier for me to write code against it. And I'm just passing those out into some strings and rendering it out to the page. So in the end, it actually comes out and looks something a little bit like this. And so let me zoom that in. You can see here's my custom project summary with the name of the project. It was based on the basic project plan EPT, the start date, and I put in a link at the bottom off to view the project schedule. All right, so there's a nice easy example for being able to read data out of the PSI. Now, the next example is we're obviously going to want to be able to manipulate data and push data back in a lot of scenarios. So how do we handle that? So the second one I've got is for adding tasks to a project. So let's have a look at that web part. So in this case, I've decided to use a visual web part. So again, still just playing by the same rules of SharePoint development, nothing complicated there. And basically what I've got is, just open up the UI layer, it's a quick little table with a couple of text boxes to find out, you know, the name of the task, how many days does the task go for, and it'll automatically go and just shove it in for us. So fairly basic, just some little validators there, and nothing overly complex. Coming back into here on my button submit. So what I'm choosing to do here is I'm actually wrapping my code up in a SP long operation, right? Now, what I'm doing when I'm adding the task is I'm actually making several calls out to the PSI. So I'm checking the project out, I'm adding my task, I'm checking the project back in, saving it, and publishing it. So there's quite a number of calls there, and it can take a little bit of time. So rather than let the end user think that everything's just hanging, I've wrapped it up for this. Now, again, you can see I'm using my service builder object, passing in the URL, so I've now got my context to my project server objects. And I'm starting things off by creating a new project data set. Right, so this is how we can define, again, what is essentially just another set of data tables, right? So we're looking like a data set, but extended for some project server stuff. I'm reading the existing project out and finding the last task that was on there. Now, from there, I'm creating my new task row. So, again, similar style to what you're going to do when you're working with data sets. I'm creating my new row object. I'm setting a bunch of properties on there. Some of these, including the duration format, from an enumeration. Now, these are actually not generated into your proxy class, but rather they're in a separate DLL, the Microsoft Office Project Server Library, which is part of the SDK as well. So I can use these enumerations to resolve the integer values that need to go back into those data tables. So again, making it easy for me to write code that I can read back rather than having to just write one there and hope that the next developer knows what it means. Once I've added my row to the data table there, I'm also creating a dependency. All right, so we can do things like that through our code. So I'm saying whatever the task was that I've just created, make it depend on whatever the previous task was in this case, which is why I looked up the previous task to start with. Again, create a new row, specify the properties of the row, push it back into our data set. So now we get down into how we push this back into Project Server, because at the moment all I've got is a data set that's in memory with some of the stuff I'd like to do. So the first thing I'm doing is I'm calling to check out project. All right? And I'm putting a comment on there, and you know, we're doing that. Now from there, the next thing I'm doing is calling queue add to project. Right? So this is where the queue comes into play. Let's grab a drink. So when we send our calls off to Project Server, our code isn't going to just wait for the response from Project Server before progressing. It's just going to push it off to the queue and say, let Project Server's queue handle it. So what we're doing when we create the task is we give the task an ID, And what we're able to do is we're able to say, well, I want to wait for that queue object to finish before I go and continue the rest of my code. So I've got a helper class here with a wait for queue method. Now, this is actually taken directly from the Project Server SDK, right? So when you're reading about the queue and how that works, it's actually got this exact code sample there so that you don't need to go and write it again if you want to be able to wait for your queue, where it essentially has a timeout and will sit there waiting for that specific task to finish based on the ID that I pass in. And once it's done, then it'll then allow me to progress. So I've added my stuff to the project, passing in my data set. I'm queuing a check-in of the project and, again, waiting for the queue after that. And finally, I'm publishing my project and waiting for the queue. So let's go back and actually have a look at how that works. So you can see here's my task, create a web part. And I'm going to create Brian's new task. And it's going to take 3 days. So I'm going to add task. I get my loading screen, so adding project server tasks. When this is done, there will be cake. As you can see, I now get a success message that says the task has been created and the cake is a lie. Portal reference there. So if we now go and open my schedule using the link on my other web part, just to prove this is not all smoke and mirrors. Come on. See, Brian's new task is there. It's taken 3 days. It's set to auto-schedule mode based on the properties that I've passed in, and I've been able to programmatically add tasks to my schedule. I can programmatically edit tasks, delete tasks, do all sorts of things. It's all just in those data tables. Now, the last thing we want to quickly go through with how we're calling out to Project Server is how we handle exceptions, right? So given that I can actually queue up a large number of actions all at the same time and send them off, I can actually find that I might get myself into a bit of trouble with multiple exceptions coming back. So if I've said add 20 new tasks in one go, there might be a number of exceptions from some of those rows that come back. So we need to actually be able to pass the error objects that come back and get some meaningful data back out of them. So looking at my catch down here, I'm hanging out for a fault exception, which is what's going to be returned by WCF when things go wrong. And again, to my helper class, I've got this get PSI client error. So what actually happens here is we get returned essentially a big chunk of XML that describes anything that went wrong with the last operation. So if there were multiple rows that had some sort of invalid data that I'd tried to pump in, I would get XML with multiple rows back. So what we're doing here is creating a new XML document and looking for some specific tags and returning using the PS client error object, which is again in that library, to get the details of the exceptions. So again, the code for passing these exceptions is in the SDK. You can literally go and take these helper classes out, put them into your code, and be able to handle the exceptions that come back. So all I'm doing in this case is passing through those individual errors, and for each error that comes back, so assuming that there may be more than one, you're just using my SharePoint diagnostic logging to pump stuff out to the ULS, so that way I can go through the ULS at a later date and figure out what went wrong with those specific calls. So, sort of wrapping that little part up, first point, love the SDK. Seriously, it is. I cannot stress enough how useful it is and how important it is when you want to start doing project server development. You really need to get it and read through some of the tutorials at the start to ramp up at a decent pace and get into this sort of stuff. Remember to take the queue into account. All right, so you know, unless you sit there and wait for the queue specifically, if you try to call back to some data you've just added, you might get yourself into some issues there. But also plan the use of the PSI carefully to avoid adding performance overheads. All right, so going through things like that service router and whatnot and throwing a bunch of individual calls like I did just there, probably not the best practice from a performance perspective. So keep that in mind and monitor your solutions. Right? Don't just write the code, push it out and say, hey, that works. Be aware of what your customizations are doing and the impact that they're having on your environment.
Thanks, Brian. So the last area we're going to look at is project workspaces. So as I mentioned earlier, for every project that you upload into Project Server, you have the capacity to have a dedicated project workspace provisioned. Now, out of the box, it looks a little bit like this. It's a normal SharePoint collaboration site, but it has a few special features in there. It has areas to collect deliverables and issues and risks and project-related documents. The idea behind this is that you can keep all that information that's important about your project in one location. Now, these aren't just spun up as a project, as a workspace, and then just left. They are quite deeply integrated into Project Server. So you'll see here you have a link to the project site in the main project center where you can go in and link through to the relevant project site. But also you'll notice down here we have indicators showing us whether or not that project has issues or risks or documents that exist. Okay, so that information is persisted based on the documents and the risks and issues being stored within those workspaces. It doesn't just end there with the web client. They're also deeply integrated into the project professional client. So we have links to the risks, the issues, and the documents directly from the FAT client. Okay. Now, out of the box, the project workspace, you may want to customize. Okay. And we find a lot of customers run into issues when they customize their workspaces. Has anyone here customized project workspaces successfully the first time? Really? Fantastic. Give me a clap, yeah. Ultimately, there are a couple of pitfalls, and we're going to go through those in a bit more detail today. But to give you an idea, this is from the Microsoft demo image, to give you an idea of some of the customizations you may want to apply. So we have a number of web parts that we've got here, which are doing PSI calls out to pull information in. Now, customers tend to like this information, basically so they can see status information about the project without having to give users access to the core project web app. So Brian's going to take us through a couple of key customization scenarios or customizations around the workspaces.
So when we start talking about project workspaces, keep in mind they're just a SharePoint site, right? All the same rules apply, right? There's nothing overly different. There's just some other things built in on top of it. So they inherit from the PWS site definition, right? So knowing how SharePoint sites work, they've all got site definitions that exist in the file system. Project server, when you install it, adds another site definition with the specific bits and pieces it needs to create a functional project site. So when we create custom web templates, we base them on the PWS site definition. Right. You can do site templates a couple of ways. You can manually create a site in the user interface and save it as a template and quite happily go and push that back into Project Server and use that for your new project sites. You've also got the option of handcrafting one in Visual Studio. So you're using the web template elements, using custom features, custom code, and pushing that out, which is what we're going to go through in the demo. So, and as I said, custom features, you can add as many of them to the template to build in additional functionality. So let's actually go and have a look at how some of this is going to work. Okay, so back at Project Server, let's go back and have a look at my code. So to start things off, I have a web template element. So how many people have actually written hand-coded a web template in SharePoint 2010? A couple of people? Cool. So as with all features, we're in our feature XML here. I've got using the web template element. I'm specifying my base template here. All right. So what a web template does is it essentially says I'm being based off the project site, grabs all the bits and pieces for that and creates the site like the project site does. It then essentially throws away what I've got in my web template and just treats it as a regular project site. I'm able to specify things like the locale, name, title. There's a whole heap of properties off there that you can customize to suit the needs of your specific project site. After that, I still get an own.xml file. So anyone who's been familiar with working with site definitions from 2007, it's a similar concept. There are some limitations on what you can do in a web template versus the site def. But web templates are the preferred method going forward for SharePoint 2010 over doing things as an actual site definition. So as you can see, I've got a bunch of lists here that are getting created, including the out-of-the-box ones and the custom one that I'm putting in. So I'm saying create me an extra links list. But I've also got some lists such as my tasks, calendar, you know, all the usual sorts of things, and a standard links list, et cetera, et cetera. Moving down, I've got a module of my homepage, which is at the bottom, and I'll show you that in a second. A list of features. I'm also including a custom feature of my own in here. So one of the things I'm doing with the web template is I'm actually adding another property to the property bag that'll let me identify what web template the site was created off. So as I mentioned, once it's spun up the site and whatnot, I've got no reference to what web template was actually used to create the site. It looks just like a standard project site. So I've actually got another little feature in here which goes and adds to the property bag of the site and pushes in TechEd web template as a value in a property called web template type. So this way I can come back to the site later and know that it was based off this web template. So if I'm doing upgrades and whatnot, I can identify the sites that were using my template and apply my updates appropriately. So anyway, moving back to ONET and looking down at the modules. So I'm saying on a default.aspx page provision, then I want a number of web parts there. By default, I'm including, you know, the web parts I created earlier, So there's my project ID provider web part, XML, and my project ID, my project summary web part. Now, also worth noting, by default there, those web parts aren't connected automatically. I've actually got a feature that's going to go and do that. So coming back and having a look at my features, here's my web part connector. So I'll zoom this in so we can have a look. So what I'm doing here on the feature activated is I'm going and grabbing the default.aspx page and using the limited web part manager. So this is the class that we use to manipulate web parts on pages within SharePoint. Right, specifying properties in there saying I'm looking for the shared version of the page. Now, I've written myself a little helper method here to find the web parts on the page. So essentially, I just get a collection of the web parts that are there with all of their appropriate properties, like zones and orders and all the properties on the web parts. Specifically saying, I want to find the web parts just by their type name in this case, right? Because I've only got one of each type on there. It was a nice, easy way to identify them. So basically, you can see I've just specified the type names of the web parts I'm looking for. Once I've got the actual web part objects, I can create some connection points, right? So off the web part manager, I can say get consumer connection points to say here's the web part consumer, and get provider connection points, passing the provider web part in to get the provider connection. From there, it's a simple matter of referring back to the web part manager to say go and connect these web parts. We're saying here's the web parts, here's the connection points, make it work SharePoint, and off it goes. And that's how the web parts are actually done there. Some other things you might want to do with project sites, and we'll show you this all working at the end to prove that, again, that we're not all smoke and mirrors, is you may want to do things like overriding content types on some of the out-of-the-box lists in your team site. So, for example, say you've got your risks list in your project site. Now, the project client and project server, to an extent as well, will also depend on that list being there and being in a format that it knows and expects. It's got a set of columns that it is looking for. It's going to look to read values and set values and things. So we can't go and break up that list, or even if you delete that list, you're going to get yourself into some big trouble. So what we need to do is we need to start looking at how we can go and change that. All right, so again, using a feature model, I've created a feature that's going to go and manipulate the risk content type for me. So I've actually deployed, down here in data, I've got my extended content type here, so just standard SharePoint content type, but inheriting from the risk content type, the project server provisions to the site collection. I'm also adding an extra field here called consequences, which I would like to associate to my content type as well. So when somebody creates my project site, they get the risks list with my additional column. So one of the other things I want to do is I want to go and hide one of the existing fields. Right, now, I'm doing this out through a feature. So in the code I've got here, you can see I'm getting a reference to the risks list. And what I'm doing is looking at my site column first and going and adding a link to the field in there. So this is how I'm adding my column in. And the second thing I'm doing is I'm finding the probability field and deciding I don't want anybody to see that. So I'm setting it to be hidden in all the forms. And the last thing I'm doing is creating a unique content type order. So this is basically saying only show one content type in the new dropdown and make it mine. So that way users will only be able to create my content type rather than the standard risk one. So what this all adds up to then is when the site gets created and this feature gets turned on, the risk list to the user is going to look like it's got all of my field changes in there, but all the existing fields are still there. Like the probability field is still there and project server doesn't care that I've added content to it. So project client is still going to work, project server is still going to work, and we're not going to break any functionality by making these changes. So what I'm going to do now is we'll go through it and show you this working. So coming back in to have a look at the list of enterprise project types we've got, I've decided I want to change the default site that gets created based on a basic project plan. So you see you've got a bunch of settings there, but you've also got an option to specify, project site template that gets used for the sites that get created. So you set that against your enterprise project type. And when somebody comes back into the project center and says, I would like a new basic project plan, we're going to call this web template demo, save. It's going to go drop that off into the queue, create my project, and also put in the request to create the site with SharePoint as well. So that'll return in a moment. So here's my schedule. And if I've done things correctly, I can come into the project site here, And you can see, here's my site with my web parts. My web parts there, my connection already exists between those web parts because it's looking the data up. I can come and have a look at the lists here. You can see my custom list that I added is in the site, so from the own.xml file. And coming to have a look at the risks list, you can see that I've got only my content type sitting on the new dropdown. The probability field is hidden, and if we scroll down to the bottom, you'll see that I've also got my consequences field there as well. So I've been able to customize the site to a fair extent through features and standard SharePoint development approaches. So nothing incredibly complicated past what you already know to do SharePoint.
Okay, so there are a number of considerations around workspaces. As you saw, workspaces are based on templates. Now, as such, those limitations around lists and connections exist, and the approaches that Brian showed us today will get you around some of those. Then the source code for that is going to be available.
Going to be on my blog over the weekend.
The risk and issue list, this is probably the main area of customization. So some gotchas here. Do not delete list items. As Brian said, you'll break the content types, you'll break the integration with Project Server, and you'll lose that ability to get your risk and issue information through into the reporting database, which is one of the most valuable assets of Project Server. Similarly, don't change the choice fields. Okay, so there are a number of choice options in those lists, of which I think there's three options in there. If you add another option or you change them, again, that integration will break. So again, that content type overriding is the way to get around that problem. Okay. And if you're out of the box, that risk list is pretty good, but it doesn't do things like a likelihood consequence risk matrix. If that's something that you want to do within your organization, learn to love calculated fields and brackets and ands and ors, okay? You'll get to the point that you see them in your sleep if you do them enough. It's not pretty, I warn you. The final thing around workspace considerations is around a thing called the bulk update project sites. Now, in previous versions of Project Server, when you moved your workspaces from your prod back to your UAT or to your dev, you had to relink your sites. You had to tell Project Server, these are where my sites are, to get that integration working. And there was a third-party tool that you had to use, a thing called WSS Site Relinker. It's part of the resource kit. Now, in 2010, that capability has come into Project Server. So it's now available there in the server settings that you can go in, click on that, and update the pointers and also the content types around the risk and issue fields. So to review, there are many, many similarities between Project Server and SharePoint development, and in fact, far too many that we can really do justice to, in a 75-minute session. We had a look, at three customization scenarios. We looked at workflow, and we saw you can build workflows in Visual Studio 2010, and those workflows can be used to encode business logic and collect information, to put approvals in, and can become quite a powerful tool. We looked at the PSI and the ability to be able to go in and manipulate data, to put data into Project Server, but to extract data through, in the case of Brian's examples, web parts. But it doesn't have to end with web parts. You could have a Windows Phone 7 could go in using the PSI to pull information out back to your mobile device. There's an application out there on the Apple App Store that enables you to go in and put your tasks and timesheet in using PSI calls straight into Project Server. But you can also think bigger picture, things like SAP and JDE Edwards. Okay, those can be used to integrate information, to exchange financial information, perhaps to generate new projects based on an approval further upstream. And finally, we had a look at workspaces and I guess some of the benefits around customizing workspaces and using those workspaces within your project. But where to next? As I said before, there's a lot within Project Server and that we can't really do justice in the 75-minute session that we've got here at TechEd. So we've got a bit of a call to action and some resources that we want to point you at. Do you want to do that or shall I?
You can.
I'll carry on. I'm going to flow.
You're
all right. So to start with, as Brian mentioned, install the SDK. The SDK is your friend. The link up there will take you through to the SDK. It's available both online and offline. It has fantastic examples of pretty much the code we've shown you today and a load of other stuff, especially around workflows and PSI, and it's fully documented and updated probably about every 2 months.
Yeah, so there was an update to it that came out after Service Pack 1 as well. And like I said, you really do want to grab the offline copy of it for all the code samples and the scripts to generate those proxy classes and the libraries and things like that.
Second thing's around review the developer curriculum. So the product team released a thing called a developer curriculum for Project Server, which will take you through some of the basics and some of the steps that we've gone through today to give you an idea of everything that you can do in Project Servicer. Some of the things we didn't touch on, like the event handlers, which are slightly different and just as powerful. And finally, go off and have a play. Okay, so this link will take you to the official evaluation site where you can download a trial copy of Project Server. You can download a VM with Project Server in it, or you go to a 180-minute evaluation copy that you can try online. I'd also suggest that you go off and have a bit of a look in the Hands-On Labs, because that demo image is available in the Hands-On Labs. It's also got Visual Studio in there, so if you want to go off and do some PSIing this afternoon, go and have a play. We've got a number of developer resources that we've put into the deck, which will be available to download through the schedule builder tomorrow, as I understand. These are some of the key ones. Again, reference to the PSI, some stuff about workflows. There's a couple of white papers that are referenced on there as well. The resource kit, great tool for that playbooks tool if you're looking at using that. And also a link through to the solution starters, those effectively, I guess, power toys for Project Server. Again, I'm not going to go through all these, but the project team are fantastic at communicating. And these are all the official links into the project team where you can get information about various things. I can't stress enough, the forums are fantastic. You probably get a response within about an hour and a half at the moment within the forums. So if you've got problems, go try the project forums. I'll leave that with you.
So, as if we haven't said it enough, one more time, people. 1, 2, 3. It's just a service application. So, on that note, let's open the floor to some Q&A. Who's got questions?
How much is the integration?
So, there's a bunch of stuff that TFS does around Project Server and integrating that. We could probably have a discussion about that offline, though, because it gets a little bit complicated. Yes?
Resource management is kind of limited inside the Project Server. So, a lot of people are using something like SAP to do resourcing. It's really hard to get stuff out of SAP for resources and put it into Project Server. Is there an easier adapter in order to get the resources out?
There's a SAP solution starter, I think, for Project Server. Specifically, I think resources is one of the scenarios it covers. So I can hook you up with the link afterwards. Is Duet. I think the SAP solution starter will give you an indication of the various PSI methods that you need to call in order to be able to do that integration, and then whatever you need to do from Duet side of it. I haven't seen a specific Duet connector.
Duet is
the connector. Sorry. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No. I think the solution starter is your best place to look rather than Duet in this case.
Yeah.
Any other questions? We'll go one down the back.
Definitely. So Mark's session yesterday covered off the BI and reporting story. I suggest go have a look at that video and it'll take you through it. But ultimately, all the information you put into Project Server is available through the reporting database and through the cubes. And you can get that information back out either through reporting services or Excel or dashboards. But check out the Mark session, 311, was it? OFS 311?
Like
yeah.
Yeah. Daniel?
Workflows. You mean? I believe partners offer that out of the box. No, you get one. You get that thing called a sample workflow, which is defined in the project resource kit. The SDK. And it'll take you through basically from idea through a selection process, through planning, all the way through to execution and closure. We'll give you an idea, but yeah, I don't think partners offer it. I don't think it makes sense to roll it into the product because you know not everyone runs Pure Prince 2 or Pure Pumbok or whatever.
Yeah. Questions, any other ones? Down here? Yep, so if you needed to, the question there was, have we ever had a need to be customizing permissions on the project site templates and things like that, if you've got them across multiple site collections? I haven't personally. If I was going to be going and doing that, though, you could implement that as just another feature into your existing template so that when you were creating the site, have it customize the features based on your specific requirements there. So you'd be looking at doing that programmatically as a way of doing that one. Does that answer your question? Yeah, well.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's that as an option as well. Yeah. We can have a discussion about that offline as well if you'd like to talk further into that point. Yep.
I'm going to say a really dirty word. Is there a way for the project initiation and stuff like that to use InfoPath or another tool like that to bridge in up that form?
Why? Can I answer that one?
Yes.
Yes, right. So there is a solution starter, a thing called an InfoPath Form Viewer web part. It enables you to publish an InfoPath form into a special web part that resides within the PDP infrastructure. Yeah. So you can use that for your collection, and then you can make that as powerful or as you want.
You'd probably find... Similar concept. It's not exactly the same. There are a few differences because of the PDP infrastructure in there, but the concepts are similar.
Yeah. Check out the solution starters. Yeah.
Anything else?
At the back.
Down the back, sir. I'm sorry.
So from a change management perspective, it's another register that you would put into a workspace. Out of the box, no, it's not there. Very simple to add a new list into that workspace template to cover off your change process. It won't integrate back into the schedule or anything like that, though. It's literally a register to capture it. Okay. Yeah. Well, in theory, you could take the workflow and incorporate logic into there to add tasks through the PSI into the workflow to take into account change if you wanted to, in theory. Whether and practicality-wise, whether or not you do it is another question. Yeah.
Cool. All right. So we might, if you've got more questions, come and have a chat to us afterwards. We might move on now and give away the ticket we've got to the SharePoint conference. So how many people have heard about the Australian SharePoint conferences? Excellent. So next year's conference is going to be the third one that Australia has seen. There's going to be business and technical tracks across all sorts of levels. Internationally renowned speakers coming there, so we get local content as well as international content. There is a discount available for TechEd attendees if you don't win the ticket that we're about to give away. The discount code is TechEd. So if you go to sharepointconference.com.au, you can get in there and register for your ticket now. And that's actually going to run out, I believe, a little cheaper than the early bird pricing. So if you want to get yourself a ticket, that's the way to go. Alex, let's give someone a ticket.
Okay, so the question is, what was the GUID? No, I'm kidding. how many PSI methods were there? Gee whiz, I think it was this fella here. Yep.
Yeah, you're giving the ticket away. Congratulations there.
Well, congrats.
Cool. So on that note, that brings us to a finish. I would like to ask you guys to also make sure you submit your feedback here, not just for the chance of a mouse, but so we can know what you guys thought of the content in the session. Be honest, put comments in. We'd love to hear what you guys think.
And if you want a sticker?
We want a sticker, come and have a chat to us. Otherwise, hope you guys have enjoyed TechEd, and we'll see you guys around.
Thanks very much.